Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here today. Well, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. And our guest here today in studio is Michael Stratford, and his topic is Coaching the Most Excellent Adventure. Sounds like a movie. But before we get to Michael, I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999. And I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of The Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, let's get to our show today, Coaching a Most Excellent Adventure with Michael Stratford. Michael happens to be a Master Certified Coach, in fact, one of the very first to be awarded this designation, and he has trained more than 6,000 coaches worldwide. Let me get that again. Worldwide. He doesn't stay home very much. He's developed curriculum for 4 coach training organizations and trained their trainers. He is known as the provocateur of transformation. I love that, and it is true. He graduated from UCI Irvine, where he majored in mathematics and theater. Again, one of those inconsistencies in his background. Theater and mathematics. And he has written 4 books on coaching. I think he's working on his 5th still. The Quintessential Leadership, 5 Timeless Practices for Leaders. Well, Michael, welcome back to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show again.
Thanks, Doug. It's cool to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. We've enjoyed you in the past. You know, we work on what we're going to talk about beforehand, but I always approach a show with you with an excitement about who knows where it's going to go.
Well, yeah, that's actually it, which is part of what the whole Most Excellent Adventure is about, is that really when it gets down to it, the whole coaching engagement, the whole profession and the client themselves, it's an adventure. When it's really going, we don't discover where we are until we're there.
Boy, does that go against some of the topics that I see so many coaching organizations talking about today. Define the ROI, define the engagement, stick to what you're doing. I don't know. Is that inconsistent with what you're saying?
I think that those things are the ways in which people get through the front door of coaching. You know, because what for me, the real essence of coaching and the adventure of it is finding out about who this person is in their own unique expression, and then seeing how they grow and solve things. And so they have to have stuff to sort of cut their teeth on if they're going to grow and solve stuff. So you're going to go through the door of what's not working or what it is that they want to accomplish, but that's not all the conversation is going to be about. And in fact, it's not most of it.
Well, in fact, let's practice a little bit about that with you. Who are you? What are you all about? Tell us about your business, how you got into coaching.
Let's see. Who am I? Because that's a very intriguing question. Who am I? I have many different answers for that one. One of my favorite, actually, I take from a guy who was a friend of mine in biology, and he says, and he's from Pakistan, and he says, I am a non-recurring biological entity. That's who I am.
I'm sorry I asked the question.
But ultimately, how I got into coaching is part of what then became the place that I play in coaching most. And so at a certain point in time, I'd been, I guess you could say through many different workshops, you know, Covey, Robbins, S, all that sort of stuff. I took a lot of those trainings and they all told me about their programs and if I did X, Y, and Z and followed their rules, that it would work. And invariably on the back end, when it didn't, they basically then said, there's something wrong with you. Nobody ever had the idea that, you know, maybe this shoe doesn't actually fit this guy. And maybe we might try to modify the shoe to fit him. So I'd have been processed about as much as whipped cream cheese. And I felt like there's no hope for me in the world. And I had a friend who had somehow gotten into coaching before me, a man named Jay Perry, and he said, I think you should go to this workshop. And I said, okay, one more place where somebody's going to tell me how to succeed, and then when I fail, he's going to tell me I suck. And I went, oh, and he says, no, trust me. And I did. So I went to this workshop in Greenwich Village in an apartment with a bunch of other people sitting around on platform, you know, carpeted platform, which is what we called furniture in those days. And this guy asks for a volunteer so he could demonstrate coaching. And his name was Thomas Leonard. He's one of the forefathers of coaching, so to speak.
Sure.
And he says, who's a volunteer? And I go, okay, here it is. I'll raise my hand. Let's get at it. And I told him my situation. And he said, okay, so when you've been successful in the past, what methodology did you use? And I swear I sat there for, I don't know, probably a good 2.5 minutes blinking like Eeyore, you know, going, because nobody had ever asked a question like that. And when you listen to that question, you hear a lot of things in it. You hear the assumption that I've been successful, which if you're still on the planet, you are.
Yeah.
That there is a methodology and that I may know something about it if I inquire deeply enough. And so I kind of fumbled out an answer to him. And then he said, so when you came up against obstacles, what traits or inner qualities, characteristics did you draw on to overcome those? And there I am. I'm in another ER moment. And I'm going, and then this proceeded, this kind of path of inquiry for the most part. And every now and again, he'd make an observation, but for the most part, he was just inquiring. And this proceeded for about 15 minutes. And all of a sudden, I found I had solutions. I found this kind of aliveness in me. And I went, oh, this is cool. I want to do this for people. And I was discovering me. I was discovering the essence of me and how I functioned well. Instead of feeling like I had to somehow emotionally morph myself into being someone else in order to succeed. And that was my start in coaching. And then I went and I got training. And I went out and I coached. And I heard a lot of messages about even how to market yourself. And one person was saying, well, you got to have a niche. And I'm going, I don't know what my niche is. And they said, well, you got to have one. And I didn't. And my coach kind of helped me through that. Jay became my coach. And we found a path for me that was really a good mesh for what I already did and what I did well, which was lead workshops. And I wound up getting a lot of musicians into these workshops, and I became known as the rock band coach. And that, again, was one of those examples of I didn't know where it was going to go. I discovered where I was. I discovered my niche through being congruent with myself and what I loved to do and what I was really good at. And that's been, I guess you could call it my mantra, is that discovery of self the entire time. How could I decide on a niche that didn't exist? You know?
Well, you know, one of the things I find fascinating about that story is that you said you didn't know where you were going to go with this. Neither did the coach.
No.
So there was no direction by the coach. There was no preconceived idea. There was no path set out. It was strictly an inquiry, an opening up of opportunities for you, as you've explained to me, to do the work and explore.
Yes.
And find the answer.
Yes.
Find the question.
Well, and like every adventure, it takes courage. You know, I was watching Wizard of Oz the other day.
Oh, come on.
with Carly. And we were sitting there watching because she hadn't either seen it in a long time or didn't remember seeing it at all. And there was that scene with the cowardly lion. It was like, what makes a muskrat guard his musk? Courage. And I'm going, yeah, it does. Because courage is what you have to call on in yourself if you're going to go into the unknown where there aren't answers already prefabricated for you. That's what every adventurer has. You know, it's not like Lewis and Clark coming across the country goes, oh yeah, there's a Pacific Ocean, I'm just going to get over there. They found it when they got there.
And not all exploration has been done when it comes to people.
No. No.
When it comes to yourself.
No. And here I am 20 plus years later from that entry point, and I'm still discovering stuff about myself as I evolve, as I get deeper into who I am, what I'm really about, and how I like to live and play in the world. So I'm still in the adventure.
The word adventure, that's what really intrigued me about the way you build this for today is, you know, we can talk about discovering, finding answers, solving problems. That just doesn't get me turned on. I mean, you know, it's like flat champagne, you know? There's no bubbles in it at all. But when you talk about adventure, all of a sudden it's adventure.
Yeah.
Who heard of adventure in coaching? Who heard of adventure in business?
Well, see, in the very beginnings of anything, it's an adventure because you don't know where you're going. And when I first started in the profession, it was first starting. So we, none of us knew where it was going. You know, we just didn't know, but there was something inside us that said, oh, we got to do this. And we got to find out what can happen. How's it going to play out? Where's the fun? What are the, like, the swamps and the quicksands that we're going to come up against, you know, like every adventure does, like Indiana Jones, you know, like the big boulder rolling toward him as he's trying to get the golden thing. You just go, wow. And for me, the reason why I'm presenting this is that in the beginning, coaching was like that. The profession was like that. And the people were engaged in that kind of juice that you were just talking about. And then through the, I guess, the rigor of trying to maintain a business for years or get a business for years or things like that, it has just become, for a lot of coaches in the profession, almost like waiting on tables now, again.
You know, you know that I do business coaching, and you do a lot of that yourself. But in business, they claim whether it's three cycles or seven cycles, but everybody pretty much agrees that there's a life cycle that businesses go through. That you start out, it's exciting, it's creative, everybody's empowered, everybody's engaged, and then you get to maturity, which, you know, starts to get a little bit stale. You start to spend all your time refining systems, and then you go into a decline. And many people have said, well, you know, this is just like the seasons and things growing. This is just like we are as people. But is coaching going through, and what I hear you saying is, no, coaching doesn't have to go through that. We don't have to stop the adventure.
I don't think business has to stop the adventure either. Because look at all of the money that has to get dragged into, all the new change initiatives that have to get dragged into a mature company to try and find innovation in a world that is changing at a pace that it has never changed before. You know, all that energy. See, I don't think business has been asking the right questions. How can we, as a business, keep this spirit of adventure and exploration while creating long-term sustainability?
Whoa, that's a question. If I had the answer to that question, I mean, I could bottle that and sell it for a fortune.
Well, yes, but they're not even asking that question.
Yeah.
They're just asking, how do we stay open? How do we keep the doors open for the next 30 years? And how do the shareholders get all the profit that they can during that time? Ironically, you know, we have a number of business models or examples where, like, Apple was very adventurous at the beginning, and then they stopped. And then the PC came in and kicked their butt for quite a while.
Yes.
So they had to come back and regather their sense of adventure and innovation and discovery and new and fresh, and we haven't seen this anymore, in order to come back and take over the marketplace, or they were going to die. So I think that it's a myth that human beings have to go through that stage and that a business has to go through that stage. I think we just don't hold open the possibility that we don't, and therefore, by not holding that possibility, it's impossible to discover how it might become possible.
You know, my personal small step in that kind of exploration is that my grandkids will tell you that I am not an adult. Mm-hmm. And they will refer to me as a kid because I refuse to behave at family events the way adults are supposed to behave.
Yes.
I rather play with the kids and get in trouble just like they get in trouble. In fact, I probably start it.
Yeah.
And I tell them, I see no benefit in growing up. I see no benefit in not being a kid anymore. Yeah. I want to be like you guys are.
That's great. That, 'cause that's the spirit of it. And in business, what that also means is that even in best practices, instead of trying to impose best practice on the millennials coming in, or whoever the next one is, Gen Z or whatever they are, instead of trying to have them conform to the way it's been, learn from them how it might be, in the same way that you learn from the kids to keep the spirit of curiosity and play alive. You know, learn from them and go, how does this world work? How's this future coming that you are already a part of and I'm having to learn how to catch up with? Instead of going, no, this is the way business is done. It's been done all this time, and this is the way you need to conform, which is why there's a lot of conflict in business between millennials and the older generations.
Entitled generation, the generation in place. Doesn't even have to be the older generation.
Yes, true.
It's whatever generation is in place is having this conflict with the next one to come along.
Yeah. And
fascinating.
I think the other aspect of it that is relevant to adventure is that we inherently get trained in placing our adventure in the wrong place.
Okay, now you're going to have to explain that one to me.
Okay. We get, we tend to think that adventure is sourced by the external circumstances versus it's a spirit inside us. In the same way that we also attribute our sense of safety to the wrong place. If the circumstances are all exactly the way they need to be, they're stable, etc., then I'm safe. But one of the things that I loved about Indiana Jones, the first movie, is that his sense of safety was in his awareness of what he could do, what he could learn, what he could adapt to, the resources he could gather. So his sense of safety went with him, which always allowed him to have a spirit of adventure. Now, if my sense of safety is in the institutions I'm in their ongoing stability, in their structure, we've seen how that can go out from underneath our feet in a heartbeat.
So let's try to define adventure for a minute, because you just mentioned what to me would have been a great inconsistency. I would think that safety and adventure are on the opposite ends of the scale. That if I'm safe, I can't be having an adventure.
Mm.
Okay? So maybe I need to know what you mean by adventure. What? How would we describe it?
Okay, well, when a kid runs around, playing around in the grass, okay, they have a sense that things are taken care of. It's a sense that they have. They're not worried about where's the food going to come from. Now, they don't have any ownership at that point in time, but they don't have the worry either. So if I know that no matter what comes, I can handle it, now I can take all sorts of different risks. I'm not talking about recklessness, but I can take a lot of risks. If my sense of my ability to keep myself safe is in my assessment of my own capacity and capability, instead of whether or not the circumstances conform to it being safe, now I can go, oh, wow, there's a tiger. Okay, I know that I can find a way to handle this, right? So the adventure comes in having that as the kind of grounded being inside you, the sense that you can handle it, which allows you to go back to the original definition of adventure, which was chance. The etymology of it goes back to the word chance and taking a chance. So that's really what adventure is about. It's about taking a chance, not knowing.
Which can be within defined parameters. So yep. I'm willing to take a chance for $1,000, but not for $100,000.
Well, and $100,000 might be reckless in the circumstance.
Yeah.
And that's not about whether or not you're safe. At the opposite end of that continuum is also that reckless, impulsive behavior can also be preconditioned. You know, that people are just like, oh, yeah, I'm just an adrenaline junkie. Yeah, you know what? Jumping off a cliff without a parachute, this is not adventure. This is like, you know, death wish.
So is adventure the actions that you're taking, or is adventure the attitude that you're taking about the actions?
It's the second.
The attitude.
Yes, it's the attitude. It's the spirit. The one that says, you know what? We're going to drive up to Los Angeles. Okay, let's make it an adventure. Where are we going? I don't know. What are we going to do? Let's go find some place to eat. How are we going to find it? I don't know. So it starts to become there. And now all of a sudden there's traffic and we go, yes, we can go the safe route. We can stay in the traffic, or we can go, let's take some side streets. Do we know where they're going to take us? Nope. You know? And except there are a few things where we might go, oh, look, you know, there might be a particular area of the city where we already know that's like quicksand, so we're not going to go there. There's a kind of fearlessness in it.
It reminds me, I watched a TV program. It was actually just last night. It was taped, so I don't know when it really was on. But they were talking about going to Paris, and the woman was saying, I've got this itinerary all laid out, everything I'm going to do, where I'm going to go. What have I missed? What should I do to enjoy it? You've been there, to this other person. And the other person said, get rid of your itinerary.
Yes.
What you want to do is you want to start walking until you're lost and then enjoy where you are.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, there's an adventure. Wasn't a lot of risk necessarily associated with it. Wasn't a matter of safety, but it was a matter, it was a spirit of what the day was going to be about. Yeah. Discovery.
Yes. And if you have the sense that you can't handle yourself in multiple situations, you can't make that adventure. Because now you have to make sure, this is why people carve up itineraries, now you have to make sure that all the circumstances are going to be just right for your safety.
You know? Well, look, we're going to stop for a commercial break, and then we're going to get back to this adventure.
Cool.
Great.
And let's see where it goes.
All right.
Back to Doug and his interesting conversation here.
Okay, we're back from the commercial break, and I'm sorry, but you and the audience have missed the most fascinating part of the show with the conversation that I was continuing with Michael here about adventure and having an excellent adventure. You know, we were just talking about what adventure really means, and we sort of stumbled into the fact that it has a lot to do with acting, with improv.
Yes.
And then improv, and where does that play in coaching? Pick up on that, Michael.
Well, as a person who was formerly trained in the theater, you know, and improv was one of the things that I had to go through. Improv has been probably one of the best trainings for me in coaching, because one of the foundational principles of improv is to say yes and. Yes, and let's see where we're going. You know, yes, and. So, for example, in an improv scene, if the other character walks up to you and he says, oh, hi, Gorilla Man, we have to save the world today. You don't get to say, but I'm not Gorilla Man. You have to say, ah, yes, and I see men with pants around his ankles that we should be flying out here. And he goes, and he can't dispute that. He goes, yes, yes, and, okay, good. And so when a client brings me something, and I remember, this was a fascinating story for me on the internet. This kid at one point wanted to create what he called man candles. And man candles were candles, because he didn't like all those sweet scents for the girls.
Okay.
And he's like 14. And he says he wanted to create man candles, and he wanted to create these things. And a coach, now a consultant might say, or some other people might say, well, that you can't do that. Nobody's going to buy that. But a coach would go, okay, you know, say with the yes and kind of energy, okay, so what are the scents you want to put in there? How are you going to find out how what appeals to men? You know, we would go with it.
Yeah.
Instead of dispute it or go to some sort of historical reference that says that's not going to be viable in a marketplace. Because ultimately, we don't know. We don't know what's going to be viable in a marketplace. And so it turns out this kid did make man candles, and one of them was fresh cut lawn. Another one was cigar, and my favorite was bacon.
Always a success.
Always a success. You know, what that does is that it also holds true for clients who want to create a career path. Because most of the time when they look for a career path, they're looking at something that already exists. But what if they don't fit that? And the coach gets to say, and the client says, but I want to use this part of me and that part of me and that part of me and that part of me, but I don't know if there's a profession in it. I go, well, yes, and what if there is? And what if something can be modified? Or what if it's just something we haven't seen yet? And now I hearken back to things like the X Games. You know, at some point you had to know that somebody said, you can't make a living skateboarding. Except look at this. Look how big it is. BMX bikes doing flips and ridiculous stuff. Multiple countries all over the world. This thing is going on. People having endorsement deals, making products, designing. There's like, it's almost like the Olympics.
See, one of the things that I love about talking to Michael is, as I said earlier, he's a provocateur. He proudly says, I'm a provocateur, which means be prepared to get poked. There's no belief you have that I'm not going to poke. But what I hear you saying is you're not a provocateur in the sense that you're claiming other things are wrong. What you are doing, what I see you doing, is poking at them to question, how are you approaching it? Is there other ways?
Yeah.
So it's sort of in coaching, we go, we don't give advice. We don't make the client wrong. The client's always healthy. But we don't tie that into any adventuresome spirit about encouraging that kind of edgy thinking.
Yes.
That edgy exploration that the client needs a little help in getting to that point, maybe.
Well, if we're not going to do it, where are they going to get the model?
Yeah.
If we're not going to go, okay, so you want to do this and that and that and that, what if that's possible? What do we need to look at to see how that could flesh itself out? Now all of a sudden, their creativity is off on an exploration. You've put a little, you know, phrase into their Google search, and it's just going. Instead of going to everything that's already succeeded.
The head of the studio here is just flashing at me. He's so involved in this conversation, he can't stay with the technical end. He says, does adventure really have to include surprise? How does surprise play into it?
Oh, great question. Great question. Yes, surprise is a definite element. And I make a distinction. There's a distinction between surprise and ambush.
Uh-huh.
They both have the same unexpected quality, but one's not near as friendly. You know, and surprise, it's one of the things that I like to have in my presentations when I do speaking, is surprise takes people out of their construct of how they ordinarily think. You can't think the same way when you're surprised. In that moment, you are like, wow, you're fully in the present going, okay, now every little bit of reality that you just, that I was just living from now has something new with it. Wow. So surprise is a really integral part of adventure.
And you know, this is one of the things that I find inspiring and exhausting in talking to you. Both. Is that I know the conversation is going to be a surprise. I have no way to predict where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. It also is exhausting because it makes me listen and it makes me think. Which, you know, sometimes I'm just coasting along with the crowd and not doing much of either one.
Yeah.
Just like some of our coaching clients.
And some of the coaches in the profession.
And some of the coaches in the profession.
After a period of time.
Yeah.
You know, they're going, okay, what is the business model? Now we've got to get best practices for business, for a coaching profession and all that sort of stuff. And I'm going, you know what? At some point, best practices weren't invented. And people still were successful. What if we scrapped that? What if we scrapped that there is an only way or an even a regular way to do it? And we started to get more in on the discovery of what's congruent with you. What's congruent? There's lots of things out there. It doesn't mean that there aren't some things to be gained from best practices, but we tend to take the whole package of them. Instead of going, yeah, you know, I want a little spice of this, I want a little bit of that potato, I want this vegetable, and we make our own stew. That then is one that is so tasty for us, we're going to repeat it sustainably instead of eating somebody else's stew. So I think if we allow ourselves to challenge the construct, what we do is that we put ourselves in the emerging future as it starts to show itself. And what I mean by that is every piece of progress over the entire history of civilization has come from somebody challenging the rules, doing it differently, doing it in another way completely. We've never made a single advancement on the planet by doing things the same way forever.
So let me throw into this, you know, so many people, when coaches get together, question, where is coaching going? What is it going to morph into? You know, the assumption being that, okay, we've come to this far, now we need to be something different if we're going to sustain. And that really sort of goes to best practices, tools, assessments, how to build your business, defining your, all of those sort of mechanical elements, I want to say, of coaching. Yep. And what I hear you saying is we haven't even begun to touch the surface of creating adventure. Why are you worrying about this implementation of tools?
Exactly. You know, because I mean, the coaching profession, at least from my frame of it, is, you know, early 90s. Okay, so we're now in 2015. What, a 25-year-old profession? And we're now going to claim that we know how to do it? Really? There's no sense of discovery. I mean, geez, science and physics have gone further than that. Even to the point where, you know, like people got challenged. And they challenged the order of things. I mean, Maxwell Planck, that scientist, said at one point in a lecture that pretty much everything about physics was already discovered, except a few things. And then, oops, quantum physics. You know, the gravity toward being sedentary and sane is strong. It's very strong. And it takes a lot for us to keep going, I do not know what the world will be like 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 3 years from now, 1 year from now. What am I going to call out of myself or strengthen in myself and see, begin to see differently so that I can meet what's coming instead of trying to sustain what is and has been?
Now, you know, before the show, we were talking about, we got into a side conversation about technology. You're doing a presentation tonight for the ICF. You were talking about you have to get your equipment ready, and we were joking about that. And you were sharing with me the fact that in other countries, Korea, Denmark, I think were the two you mentioned, that they are so far ahead of us from a technology point of view.
Oh, yeah.
And my question is, is technology going to play a role in this adventure?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, you know, I can see, even just at this point in history, I can see an app, you know, where people coach themselves around the ordinary mundane things, you know, so that they use a coach for the things that are the knottier problems, you know, the challenges that they really want to go, the transformational
pieces. More difficult, not naughty.
Yes. Naughtier. Okay. Not the naughtier problems.
This is a G-rated show.
Yes. I'm having trouble with my handcuffs. What do I do? You know, so, yeah, technology, yeah. And I think that even when you have things like the Cisco Presence system, which is going to allow us to bridge space even more personally, we're going to be getting back to a more personal connection with the help of technology. You know, interimly, it's creating a certain amount of distance. But ultimately, I think it's going to create a certain amount of connection. And when it feels like I'm sitting in the room with you and you're in Bangkok, but it feels like I'm across the table from you in as much a personal way, when the technology creates that, yeah, that's going to help. In the middle, it'll get in the way. But that's just because we're learning what to do with it, I think.
So technology is going to have some impact. It isn't the solution, but it's going to have some impact. I mean, for instance, you and I have done a show before where we were on the phone, not in the studio.
Yeah.
Now we're here in the studio looking at each other, you know, about 2 feet apart. This is so much more fun. You know, this is so much more fun. You know, we really have, there's more interaction here.
Yes.
And yet so much of my coaching is over the phone, which is this, you know, which I want to say, to a client, well, it works just fine. You know, I listen really hard, and there's no distractions for me, and obviously it's more efficient for my time. But there's a separation there.
There's a little bit of one, but then, you know, without getting too weird about it, we start to go into quantum physics and things like entanglement. Is there really a separation, or is that really only our perceptual capabilities of, you know, like our eyes perceive a separate thing? I mean, I'm sure that if you and I had some sort of, you know, quantum level of electron microscope, we wouldn't see any separation. We would just see electrons and things like that in here. There wouldn't be a separation,
period. I have to take your word for that one.
But, you know, yeah, there may feel like there's a separation. The interesting thing is that I'm part of a few groups on Facebook, and one of these groups is very transformational oriented, but, you know, practical, is, you know, they've been wrestling with this whole internet marketing phenomenon about, you know, autoresponders and all this sort of stuff. And what we're actually coming back to is how to increase experiential relationship with people.
Sure. That's what it's all about.
Yes, because... yeah, somebody could buy your product, you know, they can sign up for some program, et cetera, click, 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 it's customization, all that kind of thing. And at the same time, what sustains is relationship. And in the same way that a major company experiences a lot of churn because people come and go and they just evaluate it based on their, you know, need at the moment, same thing happens with a lot of program-oriented that people have gotten through an internet marketing kind of strategy only. And they come and they take the product and maybe they'll do something with it, maybe they won't. But I think people ultimately are looking for human connection. They want that facilitated. At least that's my current frame.
Well, I think it is. And I think that connection for some of us, for some of the, I'm going to say generations, but it doesn't have to be generations, they get that connection through the internet. They get that connection through Facebook. They get that connection through Twitter. I'm getting that connection through the radio show with people. Some people get that connection through phone coaching. Mm-hmm. Some people have to have it face-to-face. It's a matter of preference.
Yes.
But what it ultimately boils down to, which I think you're highlighting today, is regardless of how you've made the connection, is the dialogue one of creating a spirit of adventure?
Well,
of exploration.
Yes, and that's in answer to your earlier question about the technology, what it's going to do is let's see. Let's find out where it takes us and be attuned to where it might take us that we haven't seen yet and not decide ahead of time whether or not it's good or bad. Let's just go on the adventure and do what we need to do to respond with it well. But if we try and decide ahead of time, that's like going out to an Indian restaurant and before you've ever tasted the food in there, you're going, oh yeah, this is going to taste like crap. You know, you're going to go in there and, you know, your confirmation bias alone, in most cases, is going to have you fulfill that message. I don't know where technology is going to take coaching.
Now, you are a person who likes adventure in all parts of your life. You, as I know you, you are a great film buff. You go see, you go to the movies more than anybody I know. you read quite an eclectic collection of books. Okay.
Yeah.
What's behind all of that?
Curiosity.
And that's the adventure, curiosity.
Yeah. Where is it going to take me? What else is out there? It's not like I feel empty in any way and I'm trying to find something to fill a hole. No, actually, I feel very whole, very solid, which allows me to be not attached to whatever it is that I encounter as something that's going to save me. And that changes the nature and the level of the curiosity. Instead of, there are some people who are a kind of seeker where they're looking for the silver bullet, right?
Yeah.
The silver bullet answer.
I hate that expression.
Yeah, but, yes, exactly. But once, yeah, I know, we use it to kill werewolves. But, you know, they're in that kind of, my friend Tom Stone talks about it. He calls it looking for yourself where you are not. So, you know, they're thinking, if only I get this, then I'll be okay. And that changes the questing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like the silver bullet analogy because the assumption is there is only one bullet that works. There's only one answer to something.
Yes, 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 yes.
And you know, my whole philosophy on coaching is perspectives, different perspectives, which give me a different perspective, I come up with a different right answer to the same question.
Well, exactly. I mean, if we're sitting in this studio, and if you're looking in one direction and I'm looking in the opposite, if you were to identify what this room was about based on just what you see from sitting there, you'd probably say it's about a door and a window to the hallway and all that sort of stuff. And me, I'd be saying, well, it's about two windows that look out on trees, etc. Who's right? We both are.
Yeah.
You know, so the perspective shifts. And if you have a perspective that life can be a grand adventure, then you're going to see it and act and engage with it that way. If you have a perspective that says life is going to be, you know, it's a struggle, it's a job, it's something that I have to fear or something I have to make, you know. That's why travel is so cool. You know, you go over there. My wife and I went to Greece last year in Turkey, and I'm encountering food. I don't know what that is. You know, I'm looking at stuff on the plate. I don't know what's it taste like? I'm not putting that in my mouth again. You know, you just seeing people in different ways, you know. Walking around Istanbul and seeing women in full-on burqas and these bright red tennis sneakers peeking out underneath the black. And I'm just going, wow, how do they see the world that way?
You know, you point up we all have different definitions of adventure. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking to a guy that won't eat anything new that I haven't eaten before, which pretty much limits new, okay, with the exception of tasting new wines. But as far as food, you know, and if it has a funny smell, which funny means I haven't smelled it before, the odds are really slim that I'm going to taste it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you talk about world travel, then my level of safety and what I perceive as being safe goes so high that I pretty much stay in Orange County.
Mm.
Okay. So, but then again, you know, in terms of adventure, I have no limitation on what I want to read. I have no limitation in what I want to get into a conversation about, you know, and what I want to explore the internet about. So we all have different interpretations of adventure.
Well, the adventure is the same. It's the location that changes.
Oh, okay, okay.
It's the realm.
The attitude's the same.
Yes, the attitude.
The curiosity.
Is the same. Yep, that's always the same. And but that's as it should be, because that means it's matching you and how you're built.
So the quest for adventure in coaching, as a coach, the quest to create adventure for my client, is going to be the same whether I'm a new coach or whether I've been coaching for 25 years.
If you're treating the client as a one-of-a-kind, yes. If you're putting them in a bottle going, I've seen this before, so I know how to deal with it, no. And I don't care whether you're new or you've been at it for 20 years. If you frame it like I know what this is, instead of going, wow, this is an odd creature. I've never seen one of these before. How does it work? Then it's going to be an adventure.
You know, I've been on an adventure. I only have one-of-a-kind clients.
Well, actually, we all do.
Yes, don't we?
Yeah,
don't
we all do. And yet, our gravity is toward sameness.
I spent so many years frustrated with people newer in coaching than I am who would ask me, what's your process? Can you write down what your process is that you use for coaching?
Mm.
And I would always walk away feeling so frustrated, like, I should have a process. I should have seven steps that I follow. Everybody has seven steps that they follow.
Right.
I just show up and have a conversation.
You improv.
I improv.
Yeah, that's what you do. And improv, in its best delivery, is a very present experience. It's a very present time. Because in order to effectively improv, you really do have to be paying attention. You have to be listening, you have to be feeling, sensing with your whole being in order to effectively improv. And that means you are really honoring the client by showing up that way.
Great. Michael, we're running out of time here. We haven't even begun to go through the script that you and I prepared, which is absolutely no surprise. So it has truly been an excellent adventure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What What would you like to share with the audience that maybe you haven't had a chance to cover before we wrap up here?
Two things. Part of what really tripped me to this adventure piece to start speaking it again is that I went to China recently, and I got the privilege of a friend set me up with his community, and he had me coaching and teaching and training people over there, many of whom are coaches. And the vibrancy in that community is like it was 20 years ago when we were first beginning. And I felt it, and I went, oh, yeah.
You mean there's a Greenwich Village in China?
No, but oddly enough, in Shanghai, there's a Chinatown. I don't know why that was. So it's available always, this spirit of adventure. It's not a function of how old you are, how long you've been in the business. It's a question of what do you need to shift in yourself in order for you to play the game like it's a constant adventure. And that doesn't mean that in an adventure you don't have lulls. Every adventure has a lull. You know, there's some Dead Sea or there's some, you know, whatever it is you want to call it. But at the same time, there is the not knowingness. And that not knowingness and loving it is really part of what makes life alive. So that's what I want to share.
Thank you very much. Michael, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. It gets more fun every time. You're going to have to keep coming back. This is too much fun for me. And for those of you who don't have any plans for around 6 o'clock, an hour from now, Michael's going to be speaking across the street at the Wyndham Hotel to the ICF Orange County chapter and continuing this conversation about adventure. So come over and join us.
Yeah.
Tell us you heard us on the radio show. Maybe I'll buy you a drink.
You may even hear a couple of songs. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, look, next week we've got another exciting guest. We're going to be talking with Sylvia Becker-Hill, the lady with the brain. She's going to be talking about corporate change agents, leadership training, and intimate executive coaching. She's going to talk about what she refers to as soulful organizations. What can you do to be at the forefront of organizational evolution? What's next in organizational development? Why managers are obsolete? And ego management is the most important capability of the leaders of tomorrow. Teal organizations is the term. If you want to get ready, look it up and tune in for a great show. Well, Michael, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you to the audience for listening. Be sure to tune in next week. I hope that today we've given you information, ideas, or poked you a little bit to make you think about ways in which you can take actions immediately that will have tremendous benefits to you and your clients. Have a great evening.